We are in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, and we're going to read verses 11 through 18. And while we're reading this, keep in mind this theme of this passage that we're going to look at today. Things set against each other. Things set against each other. Wisdom, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 11. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider. God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Be not righteous overmuch, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldst thou die before thy time? It is good that thou shouldst take hold of this. Yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand, for he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. Now, before we go into the lesson today, I want you, we read through this, and in verse 13, we've already handled comments on this verse when we did Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 15. Consider the work of God, who can make that straight which he hath made crooked. Well, you're reading in Revelation, for instance, chapter 3, verse 7, and God says, I'm going to open a door and no man's going to shut it, and I'll shut a door and no man can open it. When God does a thing, there's nobody on earth, there's nobody in the universe that's going to fix it when he sets it a certain way. So we've already commented on that. And also, we've commented on verse 15 when we did the study on evil under the sun, bad things people can't understand. All things have I seen, verse 15, in the days of my vanity. There's a just man that perisheth in his righteousness. There's a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. And we, you know, you just can't reconcile that, because the natural man says a righteous man should live out his days and a wicked man should live out half his days. So we've commented on both of those, and we're not going to comment on them again today. And that's why I say in the lesson that we're looking at today, we're looking at things that are set against each other. And in the first case, Solomon sets wisdom against money. And in verse 11 and 12, let's read it again. He says this, wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there's profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. So now we have these two things, and honestly, both of these are under the sun, are natural pursuits of men. I'm quite certain that probably most college students that go to college are not seeking wisdom, but a lot of them are going there to get an education, and the purpose is they want to make a good living. So they're going to get a degree, or they're going to get an education in whatever field they're studying, and hope to be able to use that for their livelihood. So wisdom and money. And here Solomon says, to introduce this pair, wisdom is good. Wisdom is good with an inheritance. And that's true. If you'll refer back with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Solomon really rejoiced in his labor until he finished the work that he had pursued, and it was grandiose. He built structures, he planted gardens, he raised cattle. It was very, very prosperous, and then sailed ships and gathered a lot of stuff. And once he got it all together, he said in verse 18 of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. So now Solomon is saying wisdom is good with an inheritance, because if you're going to get all this, you got to know what to do with it. And that's very, very true. Wisdom is needed in order to properly manage something that you've inherited. If you've studied people, or you may have even experienced this in your own life, the pioneer, the guy that started it, that worked to make it, understands and appreciates the value of what he's accumulated. The person who inherits it doesn't understand the value of what he's inherited like the person who put it together. And so he'd have to have wisdom to know how now to deal with it and either expand it or, you know, properly manage it. Well, let me just give you an example. There are many, many, but I'll just give you an example that kind of pertains to Corpus Christi. Whataburger. In 1950, Harmon Dobson started the first Whataburger, and his point was, I'm going to make one that's big enough you got to hold with two hands, and when you take a bite of it, you're going to look at it and say, Whataburger. So that was his, that was what he started over here on Ayers, and that was the first restaurant. By the 1960, 10 years later, there were 17 restaurants, so he already had the idea in a sense of franchising or expanding company stores. But he died in a plane crash in 1967. And when he did, his heir, his wife, Grace, took over the business. So in the 1970s, by the time that you got through those, that next decade, so he started in 50, right? So the decade of the 50s, 17 restaurants, 1960s, it expanded by the 1970s, 200 restaurants. All right, in the end of the 1980s, 440 restaurants. In the 1990s, their son Tom Dobson took over management of the enterprise, became the CEO, and by 2000, there were 575 restaurants, so 50 years. There, you understand the heirs are continuing the philosophy of the entrepreneur. Today there are over 850 restaurants in 14 states and 50,000 employees. You know what? It takes wisdom to do this. Okay? And so Solomon said, wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is a profit to them that see the sun. And certainly the heirs in that legacy continued on with the original philosophy, and you know, they added various things like the nickel mug. Remember the five cent mug of coffee, and all the kind of things the various things that they have done. And so that would be an indication of somebody that took the original thing and kept it going, sort of along that plan, or even more so. All right. Well, some that who don't have wisdom have spent it up, and that's probably more common than the other. It's like, woohoo, look what I got here. And man, all of a sudden, you know. Proverbs chapter 20, why don't you go over there with me, because it's a great commentary on the verse we're studying. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 21. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 21. Solomon said, because he's talking about this inheritance thing, Solomon said in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 21, an inheritance may be gotten hastily at the beginning, but the end thereof shall not be blessed. You come into too much too soon. You know, sometimes when people are setting up their estate, they'll have staggered distributions to the heirs. So when they're 25, they get a little bit. When they're 30, a little bit more. When they're 40, maybe a little bit more. And the idea is they don't get it all at once. And by that time, hopefully, they've matured a little bit and know a little bit more about what to do with it. So some spend it up. The prodigal son is a perfect example. Give me my inheritance, and he takes it. And I mean, in short order, it's gone, and he's wasted his substance with riotous living. Let me tell you, I've met some of those. The prodigal son, fortunately, came back home, but I've met some that got eaten up with the inheritance, and, you know, being in the banking business for sure. And I'm not going to name any names, but I know one guy who inherited probably $50 million worth of producing oil properties and reserves, you know, and started a company. And if he bought a boat, like a Boston Whaler, those were made in, Lynn, how many different sizes of boats? Maybe 10 different sizes, from 17 to 30 or something like that, feet long. All right. He'd buy one of each. If he'd buy a Cadillac, he'd buy a fleet. He bought a jet and he hated to fly. But whenever he'd hunt in Alaska or whatever, he'd fly his friends and he'd drive the Suburban. Eccentric. And, you know, in short order, he went through it all. There was another guy there that I know that had a great fortune of monthly distributions coming to him, and he basically financed a bar owner by buying drinks for everybody and for himself. And another guy, his father had not died, and he had gone through the estate, and it was a tragedy to the dad. And on it goes. I could just tell you story after story. I have to be careful with these things. Just the point is, Solomon said, if you're going to get an inheritance, you need to get it with wisdom. And there's a lot of truth in that. All right, so what he says then, when he makes his comment of setting wisdom against money, he says in verse 12, wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. Well, he gives you actually in Ecclesiastes a great example of how wisdom is a defense. Look in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and look at verse 13. This wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. There was a little city. Now he's telling you a story, and this is not a parable. He is acquainted with this episode, and he's now telling you what happened. There was a little city and few men within it. And there came a great king against it and besieged it and built great bulwarks against it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man. All right, so a poor wise man doesn't have any money, but he may have a lot of wisdom. In this case, he did. And he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet no man remembered that same poor man. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Well, he saved that city, and he did it not by his own strength, not by the power and might of an army, and not by wealth, because he was a poor man. He saved that city by wisdom. I remember a time when Joab was getting ready to take down the city of Abel because Sheba had run in there, who was going to be a rival king to David. And the wise woman of Abel looked over the wall to see him down there. What are you doing? Are you going to destroy the city inhabited by a wise woman? He said, no, I don't want to destroy the city. I just want Sheba. She said, well, you'll have him. And I mean, over the wall. Wise. And so wisdom is good. It is a defense. But Solomon says here, and money is a defense. And that's true. You know, people have said before, have you ever heard the expression, we need a war chest? Yeah, they do that about political enterprises, or maybe if there's a big capital expansion going on in the business, we're going to need a war chest. Money is a defense. Look with me in Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10, Solomon comments on this when he writes the Proverbs. Laying up in store against the time to come. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 15, the rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. And so that's very true. That, you know, you've got people in this country right now that already anticipate that things will get worse rather than better in time. And so they're prepping. They own acreage and they have ways to support themselves, and they got gold and more ammunition they could shoot in the rest of their lifetime. And, you know, the idea is we need a defense, okay? So both of them are a defense. Verse 12, though, he goes on to say in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Now, with money, you can make a living. But with wisdom, you can live. And there's a difference. Money cannot buy life. Money cannot buy life, but wisdom giveth life to them that have it. I suppose Solomon's great commentary on that truth is found in Proverbs chapter 8. So let's go over there. Proverbs chapter 8. He's not telling you, you see, he's not telling you that it's wrong to have money in this passage of Scripture. What he's telling you is, though, if you have, when you're relying on what these two things can do, you're going to want wisdom more than you're going to want money for defense and for life. All right, Proverbs chapter 8, look at verse 35. The whole proverb is about wisdom, and wisdom is personified as a person, as a woman. And she says in Proverbs 8:35, whoso findeth me findeth what? Life. And shall obtain favor of the Lord. You can't do that with money. But you can with wisdom. And the other, so he says that wisdom is better. Notice Proverbs chapter 8, verses 10 and 11. He's introducing the comparison here. And he says in Proverbs chapter 8, verse 10, receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is better than rubies. And all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. So it doesn't hold, as we say, a candle. Riches and wealth don't hold a candle to wisdom. Look in same proverb, Proverbs chapter 8, look at verse 17. Wisdom says, I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. So Solomon's warning in Ecclesiastes is he can't hang on to all that he's accumulated. But wisdom says, I'm going to give you durable riches, which means what? These are going to go past the lifetime. My fruit is better than gold, verse 19, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. Now for us who are Bible believers, us who are saved, and us who know that we have New Jerusalem and an inheritance waiting on the other side, this means a great deal. Because it says here, if you've got a choice between investing wealth here on the earth or investing wealth in eternity, you're going to do better to follow wisdom and invest in eternity, because it's durable, it's substantial, and your treasures will be filled. And so, and Jesus then picks up on that when he starts his earthly ministry and says to us, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moss and rust doth corrupt and thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So this thing with wisdom is, so it does something money can't do, in that it gives us lasting wealth. That's really a sharp commentary. Now this that you just read is from a man who has experience in what he's telling you. Okay? He's had wisdom. He had more wisdom than anybody. God gave that to him, wisdom and understanding. He had wealth more than anybody. He had them both. And he can tell you from his personal experience under this sun, this one's better than that. And tell you why. So if you're fortunate enough, take practical wisdom from the lesson you're learning today. If you're fortunate enough to have received an inheritance, or if you're in line to receive an inheritance from somebody, even though it may not seem significant, or maybe it's vast, recognize this: you need wisdom, okay, with that inheritance. That's very, very true, okay? All right, and then he jumps down here to verse 14. As I said, we've already commented on 13, when God does something in the earth, like making something crooked, you're not going to straighten it out. Nobody can. God's the only one. And by the way, I'm very thankful that God is in the business of straightening out crooked things, aren't you? I don't know that God ever started with a straight nail. I think he had to straighten out every one of us, right, in order to get what he's getting out of us today. And thank God for that. All right, but in verse 14, he gives you these two things. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider, God hath set the one over against the other to the end that man should find nothing after him. So now we've looked at wisdom and money. Now he says, I want you to take a look at these two things. The day of prosperity and the day of adversity. Well, I think it helps when you've just had a couple of verses on that include comments on money. I think it's helpful for us to go back and define what the word prosperity means and define what the word adversity means, because we probably still have money on the mind. We're talking about being rich and being broke. That's not what he's talking about here. Not really. Prosperity is the condition of being successful or thriving. So it may not have anything to do with money at all. It might be successful in an athletic pursuit or successful in a hunting pursuit or a construction project or something like that. So or graduating from school. I mean, it's prosperity is the condition of being successful and thriving. All right, let me give you an example of how this often doesn't include anything with wealth or money or those kinds of measurable assets. Keep your finger where you are, and let's go back to Joshua, and look with me at chapter 1, because the Lord actually gives Joshua instruction about how to succeed and how to prosper. Joshua chapter 1, and look at verse 8. Okay, Joshua chapter 1. So we're talking about prosperity here, or being prosperous, being successful. Joshua chapter 1, verse 8, "This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then shalt thou make thy way," what's the next word? "Prosperous. And then shalt thou have good," what's the next word? "Success." That's prosperity. That's prosperity. We think of it in terms of dollars and cents, but it's not. It's success. It's thriving. And you know what back here in Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, when that's going on in your life, when you're in that season or that day of prosperity, here's what you want to do. You want to be joyful. You want to be joyful. You've worked to achieve something. You've applied yourself biblically, perhaps, to be prosperous, and when you do, you should go, "This is great." Enjoy the moment. Rejoice. Thank God. And savor that, because often people make pursuits and they don't turn out. And so that when they do, you should take joy in that. Okay? So in the day of prosperity, be joyful. You have your opportunity. You have your satisfaction that you've accomplished something. I can remember when I went to Bible college, some of the guys that went to school there testified in every graduating class. Let me give you this little caveat before I tell you what they testified. Every August, whenever classes would start, Dr. Rutman would say, "The test of a man's character is what it takes to stop him." And then he said, Bob Jones Sr. would say, "Finish the job." So 3 years later, when somebody's getting his diploma and he's getting ready to say what he gets to say at graduation, often every graduation class, somebody would say, or more than one guy would say, "This is the first thing that I have ever finished in my life." Enjoy it. Enjoy it. That's the day of prosperity. Then he says in verse 14, "But in the day of adversity, quit, throw in the towel, give it up." Is that what he said? No, he didn't say that at all. He didn't say in the day of adversity, quit. He said in the day of adversity, what? Consider. Well, what is adversity? So prosperity is the condition of being successful and thriving. Adversity is the condition of serious and continued difficulty or misfortune. It's the opposite. So Solomon didn't say, that's the thing right there that you can use as the excuse now to sit on your thumbs for the rest of your life and be a victim. No, he didn't say that. He said, when you hit the day of adversity, consider. In other words, what's he saying? Think carefully about the circumstances that brought you to this adversity. Think carefully what hand God may have in this. Think carefully what enemy may have a hand in this. Think carefully about how you can grow from the experience. Think carefully about the adversity, especially with regard to what action you should take in response to the adversity. There's enough cumulative age in here in this room. We can all testify to this. We generally learn more in adversity than we do in success. You're going to learn more in the valley than you will on the mountaintop. You just do. And he says here, Solomon says here, the hand of God is in this. He said, God hath set the one over against the other. God's got something here. The Lord set it up this way. You know, they used to say before every Olympics, the joy of victory and the agony of defeat. Remember that? And many athletes that have gone through something that seriously disappointed them, a defeat or something like that, worked harder and then became successful in the next thing. So what Solomon is saying is, you and I need adversity. We need adversity. Job needed adversity. Did he not? I mean, did Job not come out better in every respect after all that? He had twice as much wealth. He had all the kids. And now he had his thought on righteousness straightened out before God, and he realized God is supreme and righteous. He humbled himself before God. He got in the right way. Every outcome of Job's adversity was beneficial. You know, and I'll tell you something. Job is recorded in here. There's 42 chapters. There's 42 months of the Great Tribulation. The Jews are going to need the testimony of Job when they're going through the tribulation. They're going to look at his testimony, and they're going to realize that the adversity Job went through was not only beneficial for him, it's beneficial for them. They're going to learn how to get through the tribulation based on what Job learned through his adversity, and many are going to survive it because of him. You know, they're going to experience firsthand what Job experienced, and to have him as a reference point is going to help them a lot. David wrote this, "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all." You need to know that God meets you in the place of adversity and brings you through it. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." All you're looking at is green pastures and still water till you get in that pit, and then you find God. And so that's very, very, very true. David Schrader used to say, "People who have never felt as bad as I feel after chemotherapy don't realize how good it feels to feel good." Because we take feeling good for granted. Okay, so his adversity actually caused him to appreciate his prosperity more. Paul said, "I want to finish my course with joy," and he did. He was a success. We see in Hebrews chapter 12, when the Lord was enduring the cross, he did that before the joy that was set before him. He realized, "I am not going to be in this adversity forever. And when I come out of it, there's joy on the other side because I will have succeeded even in my adversity." Now, he says this in verse 14, "In the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider God has set the one over against the other." There's a purpose in it. "To the end that man should find nothing after him." The idea is this. After you've been through enough prosperity and adversity in this life, you'll be able to say, like so many others have said, "I've seen it all. Noel, there's very little that'll take place now in the rest of your life that will come as a surprise to you." Right? You've seen it. I have to throw him a bone every once in a while to, you know. just, he's my octogenarian buddy. He's showing me how to, if I live in through the next decade, he's showing me how I'm supposed to carry on. So there's my example right there. But yeah, you get to a place, you've just seen things, and all of a sudden something happens, and the younger people are like, we're never going to survive this. And the old guys are like, whatever. And you're like, aren't you excited and upset about this? Not really. I've seen this before. And you know what this what he just said there to the end, that man should find nothing after. You know what he's telling you also is, you can't rush life experience. I know young guys that are zealous. I were young and zealous, and we were young and zealous. We thought we could set this world on fire and accomplish things that other people had never done before. And you know what our problem was? We didn't have enough life experience. And you can't rush it. And you have to go through adversity. You have to go through prosperity. You see how you come out on the other side. And once you do, you got it. They say, okay, now, okay, I get it now. Bain and Mary Beth are over there teaching our young adults Bible, and his method of teaching is different than Randy used to teach. Randy taught a lot of Bible. He's teaching some Bible with life experience. And that's a good thing, but you know what it's doing? It's setting them up so when they go through those life experiences, they'll understand a little better than if they didn't have sort of a roadmap. But they're going to have to still go through that stuff. Because that's the end. God doesn't want us to find anything after us. You learn in these things. Paul said, I have learned, right, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know what it is to be hungry. I know how to abound, and I know how to be abased. And you can't do that. It is the school of hard knocks, and there is no way around it. Okay? So he's giving you this setting money against wisdom, and he gave you some instruction about that. This one's better than that, and this one gives you some life, and the other one can't. And day of prosperity, you're going to get some of those. And day of adversity, you're going to get some of those too. Be joyful in the day of prosperity and consider in the day of adversity. It makes you a better man, better woman. And then he gives you this in verses 16 to 18. Be not righteous overmuch, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldst thou destroy thyself? Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldst thou die before thy time? It's good that thou shouldst take hold of this. Yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand. For he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. All right, so here now he's giving you, you know, righteousness and wickedness. He's giving you wisdom and foolishness as couplets to compare. And he says, first of all, be not righteous overmuch. Make a little note here of something I thought about, but you know something? Your spouse is going to love me for saying what I'm going to say. So listen carefully. You don't have to be right all the time. Be not righteous overmuch. Don't be a perfectionist. The Pharisees, you know who those guys are. They destroyed themselves with their own hyper attention to righteousness. They wouldn't eat unless they washed their hands, and they're nitpicking Jesus Christ to death over every little something. They strained at a gnat and swallowed a camel. I mean, you can't be that righteous. You just can't. God is the only one. Look at verse 20. I mean, it's not in our study today, but look at verse 20. There is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. You're only going to be so righteous. And if you strain for that ultimate perfection, you literally destroy yourself. I remember, it's been years ago now, but I got a call from a lady in Rockport. We were dealing with 1 John 1:9, confess your sins, you know. It's like, that's not written to us, and I don't sin anymore. 1 John 3, he that's born of God cannot sin. I don't sin anymore. I was like, you know. Okay, and you know what that's done to the rest of her Christian life? It's destroyed it. You know, you ever read Romans chapter 7? Yeah. In Romans chapter 7, Paul clearly shows us the incorrigible nature of our flesh. He said, "Oh, wretched man that I am, who should save me from the body of this flesh? I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For the will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not." You know, in Paul's zeal for righteousness, was he not more zealous than any of those guys of his contemporaries? In his zeal for righteousness under the law, he became the greatest enemy of Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is the most righteous person that ever walked on the face of this earth. Paul nearly destroyed himself with his own righteousness. He finally had to humble himself. You know what he accounts for us in Philippians chapter 3. We won't go over there and read it, but he accounts for us the nature of his righteousness. I'm telling you, he was blameless before the law. But you know, when he compared his righteousness with the righteousness of Jesus Christ and decided which to have, you know what he said, right? "I count all this but dung." Job, in Job 31, he enumerates his righteousness. He was a good man. But all of his righteousness nearly destroyed himself when he put up his righteousness against God. That's why he's telling you, be not righteous over much. Listen, why should thou destroy thyself? You will never be as God can make you be. And then he says here in verse 16, neither make thyself overwise. You know what I've learned? Same thing you've learned in these years. Nobody wants to be around a know-it-all. You make yourself overwise and you will have one friend left on the earth. It's you, me, myself, and I. You'll destroy yourself. I mean, have you ever heard the expression, he was too smart for his own britches? Okay, what he's saying is he's so swollen with his own conceit, he doesn't fit in his pants anymore. I mean, many people around this Bible have become so conceited with their wisdom, they aren't afraid to change or corrupt God's words. And Paul said there were many of them in his day. We are not as many which corrupt the words of God. That's what he said. Who is your wisdom? 1 Corinthians 1:30, who is your wisdom? Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 1:30, who is your righteousness? Jesus Christ. By comparison to him, you know nothing, and neither do I. So instead of being overwise, what should we do? Make friends of other people who are wise and count on them for wise counsel. Like one man said, you can always buy brains. You don't have to know it all. And so when it comes to righteousness, okay, don't kill yourself if you made a mistake. And when it comes to wisdom, don't be lazy, but recognize there's a lot you don't know. Okay, and then he says in the next verse, be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. So don't give yourself to wickedness. You know, remember when, go back here to Ecclesiastes chapter 2 in verse 3. But you know, Solomon tried wickedness. He tells you, I got into foolishness and I got into wickedness and I wanted to see how that compared with wisdom and I tried it out. And he's telling you now, you know what, you better leave that wickedness alone. Watch what he says here in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 verse 3. I sought in mine heart to, what are the next two words? Give myself unto wine. You got a generation of people now that are very confused emotionally. And this confusion is not only affecting their minds, affecting their hearts, affecting their understanding of God. It's affecting their own understanding of their own personality and bodies. They don't even know what gender they are now. Right? I mean, they're just confused. And you know what he said? The Bible says when you get confused about creation and who God is and those kind of things, God gave them up to their own vile affections. Solomon said, I gave myself to it, and you give yourself to it, God's going to give you up to it. And they get to the place where they say, God made me like this. Not really. You're challenged with the same kinds of temptations and things other people go through that we have to sort out with the words of God. You give yourself to it, God give you over to it. You do not want that with wickedness. You remember the saying, it doesn't hurt to repeat it again, sin will take you further than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay. And you get on that choo-choo train and ride it out for a while, you will reap what you sow. You sow to the flesh, you will of the flesh reap corruption. Look, I don't know about you, but I'm bad enough as I am. I don't have to go pursuing wickedness to see how much worse I can be. Just, you know, I got enough trouble handling what's here right now. And then he says, so don't be wicked over much wicked. I mean, you're going to be some wicked because it's just who you are, but don't be over much wicked. And neither be thou foolish. You know what the famous last words of a redneck are? Hold my beer and watch this. That last one is a doozy every time then. You know what he says? He says, why shouldst thou die before thy time? We want enough wisdom to offset our foolishness and to lead us in the paths of righteousness. Wisdom gives us life and foolishness gives us death. Just choose to live. Paul said in Philippians chapter 4, let your moderation be known unto all men. Okay? You and I are moderate people. There's an element of wickedness, it's all this righteousness the Lord has given us. There's an element of foolishness with all this wisdom that God has given us. We don't like it, but it's there, so don't pretend to be. You're not 100%. And that's okay. Don't pretend to be something you're not. The Pharisees tried that. Didn't work very well. So he says to us in verse 18, it is good that thou shouldst take hold of this. Yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand, for he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. And that's so true. You don't want to live your life out on the extremes in the matters of wisdom and foolishness. He'll say at the end of Ecclesiastes, we'll read it soon enough, fearing God is the whole duty of man. The virtuous woman in Proverbs chapter 31 is praised because she fears God. By the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil, and the fear of the Lord is the beginning of. That's, I'm telling you what, learn. If you have to learn anything and be good at something, get real good at fearing God. That's what he's saying. You get good at fearing God. The rest of it will take care of itself. He'll keep you in the boundaries and help you run straight. And that's so true. So true. So there's a lot of good practical wisdom here from Solomon today. Let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. We'll be dismissed for a little while, enjoy some fellowship. We'll get back here in 10 minutes or so and begin our morning service. Father, thank you for the depth of wisdom that you gave to Solomon, and thank you that you compelled him really to put it in writing for our benefit and then gave us an opportunity to study it so we could learn from it and live by it. For we ask you to do these things now in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.